This is Bud Carey and Old Radio Theater. And the last time you're going to hear us for a full month. We're doing a special marathon again to get a little money in for KPFA. And so we won't be back with you until November. All of September has been the things that were requested when we did our program live in June. And we're going to wrap up the month with yet two more requests. Someone wanted to hear the Andrew Sisters radio show. So I've dug out the very first one of their own series that they did on December 31st, 1944. It features Gabby Hayes, the writers of the Purple Sage, and special guest Bing Crosby, Patty, Maxine, and Laverne Andrews. And part two of Old Radio Theater will be Tom Mix. It's quite a mix today. This is Bud Carey. It's Old Radio Theater. Please stay with us for the Andrew Sisters show.
Marvin Miller. I'm an announcer by trade, but at present I'm holed up on the Andrews Sisters' Dude Ranch. I've been working with the kids for years, but not until their Uncle Pete willed them this big ranch did I ever get this far out in the country. Let me tell you what happened the first day. As we arrived at the little water stop station.
Well, kids, here we are, the wide open spaces.
And look at all the fresh air.
Gosh, just makes you want to breathe all the time.
Hey, look at the scenery. What a honey of a backdrop this would make for a theater.
Well, I'll be a ring-tailed, horn-toed if you three gals ain't the Andrew Sisters.
And I'll be a killer dude for Mamarilla if you ain't our ranch foreman, Gabby Hayes.
You're darn tootin' I am. Drove in from the ranch to fetch you gals.
It's good to know you, Gabby. I'm Maxine.
And I'm Patty.
I'm Laverne.
Well, now, I'm mighty proud to pump your paws. But shucks, I knowed which was which the minute I shot my eyes on you. Got your pictures all over my bunk, especially Miss Patty's. She's my pin-up gal.
Well, Gabby, where's our car? Let's get going.
Buggy's right there, Miss Maxine.
You mean we have to ride in a buggy?
Why, Miss Patty, that's one of the finest surreys in these parts.
Looks more like the surrey that the fringe fell off.
Well, I suppose you know what your Uncle Pete left you.
Why, no. What did Uncle Pete leave?
A cactus plant and a mortgage. He got stuck on both of them.
Oh, wait till the Dude Ranch gets going. It'll pay for itself. Come on, Gabby, make this buggy move.
Yeah, this thing's slower than a Toonerville trolley.
With my high starch collar and my high top shoes and my hair piled high up on my head, I went to lose the jolly hour on the trolley and I lost my heart instead. With his light brown derby and his bright green tie, he was quite the handsomest of men. I started to yen, so I counted to ten, then I counted to ten again. The trolley, ding, 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 went the bell, ding, 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 went my heartstrings, for the moment I saw him I fell, chug, 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 went the motor, bump, 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 went the brake, bump, 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 went my heartstrings, when he smiled I could feel the car shake, he tipped his hat and took a seat. He said he hoped he hadn't stepped upon my feet. He asked my name, I held my breath. I couldn't speak because he scared me half to death. Buzz, buzz, buzz went the buzzer. Plop, plop, plop went the wheel. Stop, stop, stop went my heartstrings. As he started to go, then I started to know how it feels. When the universe rings. When the universe reads. Buzz, buzz went the buzzer. Clop, clop went the wheel. Stop, stop went my heart screamed. As he started to leave, I took hold of his sleeve with my hand.
That's how we arrived and started riding to Dude Ranch's. And then the fun began.
Marvin, have you seen Gabby around?
Well, he was over at the cook shack about an hour ago helping to get things ready for our New Year's party tonight.
Look, if Gabby doesn't leave that cook alone and quit fussing at him, he's going to get his beard clipped with a meat cleaver.
And Gabby has such a pretty beard.
Oh, Gabby doesn't mean any harm. If he wasn't fussing at someone, why, he wouldn't be happy.
I'm going to fire that blasted cook if it's all I can. My natural life. That's what I'm going to do. I am.
Well, what's Elmo done now, Gabby?
What's he done? Why, he's been reading the fence heads a much hog meat. They're grunting in their sleep. Yet so every time they turn over in their beds, they want to sing, "Oh, would you rather be a pig?"
Oh, Gabby, you're stretching the truth.
Oh, I ain't another. Oh, Miss Patty, here's a telegram come in a while ago.
Oh, boy, maybe it's our first reservation for the ranch. Hey, kids, it's from Bing Crosby. He's coming here.
Well, read it quick so we can all shout.
We'll arrive at your ranch Sunday, December 31st. Clear out a crib in the warm end of the barn. I'm going to hibernate for a spell. Signed, Bing.
December 31st? Why, that's today.
Oh, Gabby, isn't it wonderful?
Yeah, I'm just real pink.
You know, Gabby, things coming here will sure get our ranch off to a good start.
I can't see why the whole ranch has to get in an uproar over a buzzard what's got gravel in his gizzard.
Why, Gabby, I believe you're jealous of things.
Me? Jealous of him? Why, he ain't nothing but a hog collar that got lucky.
Just can't wait to hear him sing.
Yeah. Your voice sounds to me like a rusty gate hinge.
Yeah. Gabby, Bing's voice is the toast of the country.
Toast of the country? Needs scraping. Why, when the cattle around here hear him sing, they're going to raise the biggest beep in history. Guys, where's he going to sleep?
Well, Gabby, I thought maybe he could share your bunk.
Well, I'd sooner sleep with a centipede. He likes horses to turn much. Let him sleep in the stable.
Oh, now you're just trying to be funny.
Well, on second thought, maybe he better not. You know, them horses mighty smart. They might stomp him to death.
If you say another word against Bing, I'm going back to the ranch house.
Oh, all right. Oh, Miss Patty.
Yes?
Suppose you and me talk about...
You and me?
That's what I said. Me and you.
Yeah.
Oh, shucks, Miss Patty. I'm going to come right out with it. I think you're as fine a little filly as ever I sot eyes on. And your skin? Your skin is as soft as a young calf's ear.
Why, Gabby, you're nice to say things like that.
Well, I mean them. You're just as pretty as a picture. Nice frame, too. Miss Patty.
Yes, Gabby.
Look at them two cows over there rubbing noses. Don't that make you want to do the same thing?
Does it make you want to do the same thing?
Hot ziggity, it sure does.
Then go ahead, it's your cow.
Oh, shucks, Miss Patty. Say, how about singing that song you was crooning to Marvin last night?
All right, Gabby.
Don't blame me for falling in love with you. I'm under your spell, so how can I help it? Don't blame me. Can't you see when you do the things that you do? If I can't conceal the thrill that I'm feeling, someone like you to love, baby. Blame your tears as sweet as a kiss can be. Blame all of your charms that melt in my arms, but don't blame.
December 31st?
It was this morning.
Yeah. All this fuss over a groaner that's got sand in his craw.
Oh, if Bing would come through that door right now, I'd grab him around the neck and give him a big kiss.
Well, fuck her up and brand me, my little Palomino filly. Thanks, young uns. My, but you kids are looking as chipper as a coop full of catbirds.
Bah, all this nonsense.
Say, what time do you have to get that beard back to Monty Woolley there?
Well, Bing, this is our foreman, Gabby Hayes.
Hi, Gabby.
Hi, Flabby.
This is an old hope I've got here. Hope. You're gonna slip me some skin, ain't you?
I'll slip you some skin. I'll skin you up so your folks won't know you from a fresh hide.
Come on now, tighten your cinch there, Shaggy. Your saddles are slipping.
Oh, don't mind Gabby, Bing.
Say, we'd like some attention, too.
Well, why not, Patty? You're so petite. You're like a bantam hen with a brood of baby chicks.
Oh, Bing.
And you, Maxine, you're still cute as a kitten.
Oh, Bing.
And Laverne, you're looking fit as a plow mule.
Oh. Oh, Bing.
Yeah. Shitty feller putting on air.
Careful there, Pops. Your grand's grabbing the brand and iron by the hot end.
Crosby, you got too much spread. I'm going to clip your horn.
Gabby, you behave. Mr. Crosby is our guest. He just thinks, kids, he's right here on our ranch. Crosby the singer.
That's me.
Crosby the actor.
That's me.
And Crosby the millionaire.
That's my brother Everett.
Say, Bing, how did you ever make up your mind to pay us a visit?
Well, I came for my health. Or get away from Hope.
See, we'd like to have Bob Hope come here, up here, too. But we just don't have any place for him to sleep.
Maybe he could sleep in the Calvinator.
Can't think of a better place for an old ham. Upper shelf, right in there.
No kidding, Bing. What was your real reason for coming up?
Well, they locked the door at Santa Anita, so I became a homeless lad.
Tell us, Cross, did you ever have a horse that ran a good race?
The rest of this conversation will be conducted in a whisper.
Well, what do you know? A talking mop.
Gabby, please don't insult Mr. Crosby.
Say, you got any good horses for sale, gals?
What do you know about good horses? Nags of yours are slower than a snail climbing a slick log.
What do you know about horses, Hedgehead?
Me, not Brain? me that pals with Roy Rogers? Boy, I lived with Trigger.
Makes a good parlay.
Why, that burned tenderfoot trying to talk to me about horses. Why, that tamest horse on this ranch would throw you so high, the birds will build a nest in your hair before you light.
Be pretty drafty up there. Gabby, you couldn't ride anything wilder in a wheelchair.
Why, you dad blessed.
Give me room, gals. Give me room here. I'll turn you every way but loose. Oh, give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above. Don't fence me in.
Take me right to the wide open country that I love.
Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze. And listen to the murmur of the cottonwoods, please. Send me off forever, but I ask you, please, don't fence me in.
Just turn me loose, let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise.
I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences and gaze at the moon till I lose my senses. Cause I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me.
Oh, give me land, lots of land, under starry skies. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze. And listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you, please, don't fence me in. Just turn me loose.
Let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky.
On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise.
I want to ride to the ridge where the quest commences and gaze at the moon till I lose my senses and I can't look at apples and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in, no.
Papa, don't you
fence me in.
It's certainly great to be out in the West, where there's never a discouraging word.
Oh, yes, where there's never a discouraging word.
By the way, Crosby.
Crosby?
How's Frankie Sinatra?
That's a discouraging word.
Now, look, boys, you're going to have to quit fussing with each other. It's New Year's Eve, and we have a big party to look forward to, so please, let's be friendly.
All right, Patty, I agree. Gabby, old man, let's call off the dogs. I've only been fooling. Truthfully, Gabby, I admire you a lot.
Well, now, that's right nice of you, Bing. Tell you the truth, I've always admired you a lot. In spite of your singing.
Hey, everybody, we just got an important message from the government.
Well, come on, let's tell all our neighbors.
Well, it's about the Merchant Marine. Listen, they need 43,000 experienced seamen during the next 12 months. The need is especially urgent for experienced mates, engineers of all classes, able-bodied seamen, firemen, oilers, water tenders, radio telegraphers, cooks, and bakers. And they'll take the last three, that's radio telegraphers, cooks, and bakers, without previous sea experience.
If we're going to keep our armies supplied and our casualties down, we've got to fill the Merchant Marine quota. Wherever possible, let every experienced merchant seaman who is now working on land return to the sea.
Hey, Bing, I'd like to hear you make a speech.
Well, then gather around, kids, because I got a sermon right here. Stand by.
Love yours
too, man. You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum, bring glue down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene.
To illustrate his laughing mind, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark?
Man, they said we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In-Between. No, do not mess with Mr. In-Between.
Oh, listen to me, children, and you will hear about the eliminating of the negative and an accent on the positive.
Gather round me, children, if you're willing, and sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right.
Gotta accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
You got to spread joy
up to the maximum,
bring glue
down
to the minimum.
Don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
folks, it's New Year's Eve. Out here on the 8th of the Bar Ranch, we're all gathered before a huge fireplace. We're going to listen to the Riders of the Purple Sage sing one of the most beautiful songs ever written about the West.
Neighbors, this is plenty mellow out here. Comfy. Makes a fella think a bit. I was thinking that in a few hours it's going to be 1945. I have some friends who'd like to be home in 1945. So have you. Fellas for whom these holidays have only meant days of blood and sweat and fire and destruction. Some days lately been a little tougher than others. They don't bleat, these boys. They do a job and they do it good. You'd be awfully proud if you could see them operate. They go to got a hold of something there, and they're not going to turn it loose until it's locked up. While they're out there fighting and dying, we must remember that they need us as much as we need them to make 1945 the year of victory. They need our letters to breathe hope into the dreams of home and burn in their hearts. On the battlefields, our blood is needed to fan back the flickering spark of life. We must buy bonds and more bonds as a pledge of faith that before next New Year's Eve, the boys will be home. You're going to do something about it, aren't you?
Folks have enjoyed our first program. To Bing Crosby, well, old Bingo knows how we feel about him for coming here to help us get our new show started. So next week, we're going to have another great guy with us, Eddie Cantor. Until then, so long, good luck, and a very happy new year from Nash Calvinator and the Andrews sisters. So please remember,
we'll be with you next Sunday afternoon.
Sister Show, sponsored by Nash Kelvinator, peacetime manufacturers of Nash Motor Cars, Kelvinator and Leonard Home Appliances, now devoted 100% to war production, came to you from Hollywood. Bing Crosby appeared through the courtesy of the Kraft Music Hall, Gabby Hayes by courtesy of Republic Pictures. The song Don't Fence Me In is from Warner Brothers' new picture Hollywood Canteen with an all-star cast, including our own Andrews sisters. Accentuate the positive is from Bing's new Paramount release, Here Come the Waves. This is Marvin Miller speaking.
This is the Blue Network.
Well, there, for the lady who wanted the Andrews Sisters show, you had the very first one they ever did, broadcast on December 31st, 1944. And they weren't too sure at the time it was going to... ...time Bing Crosby as their special guest. Patty, Maxine, and Laverne. Laverne died some time back. Patty's still around and showed up every so often on The Gong Show. And Maxine, with whom I worked in my days as a singer in legitimate theater, has been doing a single on her own. And quite recently suffered a major heart attack while performing her one-woman show in Chicago. And so, of course, we wish her well. This is Bud Carey. It's Old Radio Theater. And you hear us each week on KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley. And those of our listeners in Fresno hear us on KFCF. A few weeks ago, we threw in some bloopers that actually happened on radio over the years and got a lot of comments about that and how people loved them so much. So we've got a little time to fill, and I'll throw in a few more for today's program.
It looks like the White House intervention has been successful. The coal miners won't go out on strike after all. It's good news to all of us that in the cold of winter, John L. Lewis has dropped his union suit.
Here's what comes of making poor, hard-working announcers get up early in the morning. It happened in the days when the National Broadcasting Company was comprised of the Red Network and the Blue Network, now the American Broadcasting Company. Their facilities were combined in Radio City, New York. One morning, a bleary-eyed announcer dashed into the studio just as he was to deliver his station break. Pressing the monitor button, he declared to the world,
"This is either the Red Network or the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company. So, friends, don't forget to visit your A&P feed store."
When Walter Pidgeon appeared for a local bond drive, he was greeted by the president of the drive, who was thrilled at the thought of meeting a movie star. The result of his excitement was the following.
"Mr. Privilege, this is indeed a pigeon."
A spoonerism is described in Webster's Dictionary as an unintentional interchange of sounds, usually identical sounds in two or more words. Webster needs no better example than the following announcer's commercial for Rupert's Beer.
"When you want to relax after a hard day's work, try Rupert's Beer."
Performers are not always responsible for the boners that you hear in radio and television. Continuity writers are very often the culprits, as evidenced by this classic bit of writing.
"Steinberg's department store has just received a shipment of large-size bathing suits. Ladies, now you can buy a bathing suit for a ridiculous figure."
"We're here at Washington's National Airport awaiting the arrival of our very distinguished guests, the King and Queen of England. When they arrive, you will hear a 21-sun galoot."
"This is Indiana's first broadcasting station."
A program director of a Texas station finished preparing the day's schedule. Later, he made a change. Instead of Les Brown's orchestra, he substituted a religious program which was to originate from New York. He scratched out Les Brown's name and wrote over it, Yom Kippur. When the new announcer came on shift, he picked up the schedule and exhorted his listeners to...
"Stay tuned for the dance music of Yom Kippur's orchestra."
Let's switch our dials to a daytime program presided over by your friendly homemaker.
Now we present our homely friend maker.
And Dad will love Wonder Bread's delicious flavor, too. Remember, it's Wonder Bread for the breast in bed.
As I stated earlier, we will not be on through the month of October. We're going to have some special fundraising again. And I would like to remind those of my listeners, at least, who made pledges during the April marathon, if for some reason you didn't get around to fulfilling that pledge or weren't able at the time, it's not too late. We go now to our second program, which was a request also for Tom Mix. And it will be Mr. Mix himself and one of the traditional programs that he did for many, many years on, I guess it was Mutual.
The Tom Mix Ralston Straight Shooters are on the air. And here comes Tom Mix, America's favorite cowboy. "Up, Tony, come on, boy.
Bread is Ralston for your breakfast. Starts the day off shining bright. Gives you lots of cowboy energy with a flavor that's just right. It's delicious and nutritious, bite-sized and ready to eat. Take a tip from Tom, go and tell your mom, spread it, Ralston, can't be beat.
The Tom Mix Ralston Straight Shooters bring you action, mystery, and mile-a-minute thrills. Tonight you're about to hear another episode in a baffling mystery. The mystery of the Vanishing Billy. Tom Mix and Sheriff Mike are trying to solve the oddest mystery of their career. For an entire village of 600 people has disappeared, vanished as totally as if it had never existed. Worse than that, two men, obviously somehow connected with the disappearance of the village, have been murdered. Tom is determined to find the answer to the mystery, not only because the people must be found and the murderers apprehended, but also because Sergeant Hank Smith of the United States Army is desperately anxious to find the girl he came home to marry, a girl who lived in the village which has vanished. In a moment, we'll ride an action-packed trail of adventure. But first, here's good news, the best news you've ever heard. It's news of a sensational radio offer. Sheriff Mike Shaw has arranged to have some badges made. That's right, whistling sheriff badges, exactly like the one the vigilantes gave him. Think of it. You can have a whistling sheriff's badge exactly like Mike Shaw's for your very own. This badge is a knockoff. There's never been anything like it before. You see, it's made of metal, shaped in the form of a shield, has cross six shooters at the top, and the word sheriff stamped in big letters to make it official. In the center of the badge, now get this, in the center of the badge, there's a siren whistle. Yes, sir, a siren whistle built in. And when you blow on it, it sounds like this. Boy, oh boy, will you ever get a kick out of this whistling sheriff's badge. And will your friends envy you when you wear it? Now, to get yours, here's all you have to do. From the top of a red and white checkerboard package of delicious shredded Ralston, tear off the little circle with the letters RSS printed in it. Tear off the circle with RSS printed in it from the top of one shredded Ralston package. Mail this RSS circle with 10 cents in coin and your name and address to Tom Mix, Box 808, St. Louis, Missouri. That's all you have to do, and we'll send you your whistling sheriff's badge right away. This offer is good only in the United States. The supply is limited, so get your order in tonight, tomorrow sure. And now, let's join Tom, Mike, and Sergeant Smith as they examine the body of Harry Phillips, Moose Creek Junction station agent, who has just been killed. Listen.
He's the second one, Tom. Salehiel Albine was the first, and he's the second. Both of them killed the same way, by a long-range rifle equipped with a silencer.
Holy mackerel, Sheriff, how can you tell that?
Why, easy, Sergeant. You note that that there window at the other end of the room has a hole through it. A neat hole drilled by a bullet. Now, that bullet come from the outside.
Nice work, Mike.
Thanks, Tom.
Bullet holes, bodies, blood. And this is no motion picture. It's real. Zounds, what a tragedy. How come this man to be killed, Mix?
If I knew that, Mr. Dane, I'd know the answer to a lot of questions.
Oh, silly of me to ask you. I forget that, after all, you're really only a cowboy.
That does it.
What, Mike?
I said that does it. I just naturally can't hold myself no longer, Tom. Now, looky here, you sawed-off, spindly shank imitation of a man.
Huh?
You may think you're a great Hollywood director. Leastways, you may think that there dinky little yellow French hat you're wearing and that blue muffler makes you one. But around here, and especially with me, you're just a little shrimp trying to make a big noise. Shut up.
Oh, perish us all. Did you hear what he said to H.D.?
Horror.
Quiet, boys. Now, look here, my poor fellow.
I said shut up.
I ignore you. Fixed. Do you believe, honestly, that the death of this man has some connection with the Lost Village?
If you don't mind, Harlequin, I'd rather not discuss the matter with you. After all, it's none of your affair. And I...
Eureka! Eureka!
Calls me around again, Willie. Now what?
I've found it, boys. It has come to me in a flash of miraculous brilliance.
Oh, yes, Mr. Dane. Oh, indeedy, Mr. Dane.
You're very wonderful, Mr. Dane.
Just what has come to you, Dane?
Why, the storyline for my picture. Oh, zounds, what an idea. Village vanishes. 600 people disappear. That gives us mystery. Now, for action, we have the murder of two men who are implicated somehow. Now, all we need is love interest. Must have love interest. How about it, boys?
Oh, yes.
Quiet, let me think.
Yes.
Quiet. Wait, I have it.
Yes, we knew you'd get it, Mr. Dane.
No, we did indeed. Yes, we did.
The sergeant there. Of course, that gives us the war interest, too. The wounded sergeant returns home, desperately anxious to marry the girl he left behind him. But the girl has vanished, too. Do you get it? The girl has vanished with the villain.
Oh, my
chin.
What he did to Mr. Dane. He struck Mr. Dane with his fist.
Now, take it easy, Hank. Take it easy.
He struck
me. Get him out of here, Tom. Get him out of here or I'll kill him.
Steady, son. I agree he's a kind of a crawling thing, but I don't reckon he knew he was hitting that close to home.
Why, that man hit me. Wait. You mean the things I said, the idea I projected? You mean it's so?
I'm afraid it is, Dane. You better wait outside and wait quietly.
Oh, yes. Perhaps silence is golden. Perhaps. Come, my men. We go.
Yes, Mr. Dane. You know, you were marvelous the way you handled that group, Mr. Dane.
Simply supreme, Mr. Dane.
Oh, thank you very much. I just want to let him have all that.
Hey, Tom. You surely ain't meaning to have that there loudmouth skunk as a guest at the ranch.
When I made that offer, it was hospitality pure and simple, Mike. But now...
But now you changed your mind, huh?
No, my offer's still good, Mike.
Huh?
The great Harlequin Q Dane will be my guest at the TM bar.
Oh, Tom.
But for a different reason, Mike. A completely different reason.
What do you mean? What's in your mind?
Just a feeling, Mike. Just one of those hunches that Harlequin Q Dane is even more important than even he thinks he is.
Tom, you got a look in your eyes that tells me you've discovered something, that you're following a trail. Now, what is it?
No, not now, Mike. Two men have been killed, and we've got to do something about it. I want Doc Green and Dober to perform a thorough medical examination.
Later that night, Tom sits in his darkened office at the TM bar. He sits hunched in a chair, his feet propped on the open window, gazing out into the star-filled night. Tom is deep in thought, and off in the distance, a coyote yaps mournfully.
Who's that? Who's there?
It's me, Tom, Hank Smith.
Oh, come in, Hank.
I know you're thinking, Tom. I know you're trying to figure out what the mess is all about.
Oh, over here, Hank. No, don't turn on the light. Just take that other chair by the window.
Thanks, Tom.
Oh, I know how you're feeling, Hank. You're having a terrible time of it.
You're certainly right about that. But, Tom, I just can't help feeling guilty about having you brought all the way from Antwerp, from a hospital bed, to solve a case that hasn't got any solution.
Every mystery has a solution, Hank. Every question has an answer, and we'll find the answer to this one.
If I could only know that Mary's safe. That she's well. But the chances are she isn't. I don't know how a village could possibly disappear. But it must have been something terrible that happened.
Terrible? Yeah, in some ways, I suppose it was.
What do you mean, in some ways?
Son, I know how important this is to you. And while I've got an idea as to what happened, Hank, I can't talk about it right now, even to you. I'm just beginning to find the signposts along the trail. Just ride along with me till I've actually found the trail itself. Will you?
Okay, Tom. But what about this Harlequin Dane jerk, the Hollywood director?
Well, for one thing, Hank, don't consider him the typical Hollywood director. Dane is one of the phonies. A lot of talk and nothing behind it. He's also a chiseler of the First Water. Now, just before you came in, I was getting ready to make a call to the Twin Rivers Hotel. A call in connection with Mr. Dane. Do you mind if I do it now?
Holy mackerel, of course not, Tom.
You see... There was one thing, among others, that I noticed about Mr. Dane that I never noticed before. Oh, Twin Rivers Hotel, please. Yes, ma'am, thank you. See, I've seen him often, Hank, when I've been making a picture in Hollywood. Him and his hangers-on, those boys who yes him to death. But there was one hombre who isn't with him on this trip, and that's surprising.
Oh, who's that, Tom?
A publicity agent named Hardy Post. A crackerjack when he came to publicity. Full of ideas. But he loved to gamble. Result was, he was always in debt. No decent studio would have him around. But, hello? If this is Tom Mix speaking. Oh, hello, Bill. Say, Bill, have you got a person registered by the name of Hardy Post? Yes, Hardy Post, that's right. Yes, I'll wait, Bill. Well, as I was saying, Hank, Dane was glad to hire him for a small salary when Hardy was broke and needed the money, and... Oh, yes, Bill? I see. Mm-hmm. How long has he been registered? July 17th. Yes, I see. Oh, no, Bill. Now, listen, Bill. Just forget I called. Right.
Oh, by the way, how's the youngster doing? Uh-huh. Specialist did the job, did he? Oh, that's good. Oh, no, forget it, Bill. Forget it. You don't owe me a thing. Oh, much obliged, Bill. So long, fella.
I was right, Hank. By heaven, I was right.
Tom, you're excited. What is it?
I don't know. I don't really know, but here are the facts. An entire village bank. A phony Hollywood director gets a letter from your father, a letter dated July the 8th. The letter says your father will be glad to have him come and make a picture in Smithville. Now, on July 17th, the Hollywood director's press agent arrives in Twin Rivers, the closest large town to Smithville, and he's been registered there ever since.
Tom, what are you driving at?
I tell you, I don't know, Hank. I'm just giving you the facts. I'm giving you the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle that we've got to put together. Now then, the Hollywood director, Harlequin Q. Dane, and his press agent, Hardy Post, are both the kind of men you wouldn't trust 10 inches. Also, the minute they enter the picture, an entire village disappears. I tell you, Hank, they're connected with us somehow, somewhere. I knew Harlequin was in on it earlier this evening when he shot his mouth off about the picture he was going to make.
I don't get it, Tom.
Hank, the Great Dane is the type of person who will tell a lie and then begin to believe it himself. You hit him because he began to invent a story around you and a missing girl. But he wasn't inventing it.
Huh?
He knew it was actually so, Hank. He knew, even though he didn't realize it, that you had come back and found your boyhood sweetheart missing.
Well, I just don't understand, Tom.
Well, Hank, here, let me put it another way. The so-called Great Dane, and believe me, that's not his right name.
Wait, Tom, out there in the moonlight, staggering toward the house.
Huh? Great guns, it's a girl. Look, she stumbled. She's fallen. Come on, let's get to her, Hank. Through the window.
Tom, I got a feeling. I think...
Here we are, Hank, here we are.
The girl. Tom, I was right. It's Mary. It's Mary, the girl I came back to marry. And she's hurt, Tom. She's hurt badly.
What is the meaning of this new development? Where has Mary Slade come from? What story will she have to tell about the vanished village of Smithville? Straight Shooters, here's your chance to be a detective. You have all the facts and all the clues, just as many as Tom himself has. See if you can figure out the answer to this strange mystery yourself. And to check your solution and to follow a trail of breathtaking adventure, be sure to join Tom Mix and his Ralston Straight Shooters next Monday in the next episode of The Mystery of the Vanishing Village. And don't miss this sensational offer. To get a handsome whistling sheriff's badge, exactly like Mike Shaw's, act tonight, tomorrow sure. Boy, this badge is made of metal and it's a beauty. Designed in the form of a shield, it has cross six shooters at the top and the word sheriff in big raised letters to make it official. And built in the center of the badge is a siren whistle. That's right, a siren whistle used by the vigilante. When you blow on the whistle, it sounds like this. Boy, oh boy, this is one offer you don't want to miss. And here's all you have to do. To get your badge, just ask Mother to get you a red and white checkerboard package of delicious, bite-sized shredded Ralston. From the top of the package, tear off the little circle with the letters RSS in it. Mail this RSS circle with your name and address and 10 cents in coin to Tom Mix, Box 808, St. Louis, Missouri. That's Box 808, St. Louis, Missouri. Do it tonight, tomorrow sure. This offer good only in the United States. Tom Mix was played by Curly Bradley. Don Gordon speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Well, kiddies, Uncle Bud blew that one. That was not the original Tom Mix. As you heard, it was done by another actor. For many years into the 30s and into the 40s, Tom Mix did do his own acting on the particular show. But that was not he at this juncture. we have time for a bonus. And I'm going to call upon Mr. Boris Karloff, one of the greatest horror film actors I think there ever was, for a little ditty called Don't Lose Your Head.
Are you one of the frightened? It must have happened to you at some time in your life. You meet a completely strange set of people. They come into your life just as subtly as they leave, and they leave you to wonder for the rest of your days. Was it real? Did you dream them all up? And why were you chosen of all people to encounter them? Here, have a glass of port while I tell you the strange story of Henry Harper, a traveling salesman. It was in Shanghai, I think, shortly after the Second World War, that Henry Harper had his curious experience. Now, Henry Harper was a rug salesman, which has very little to do with the story, except perhaps to explain that he was a man who was used to hotels, sleeping away from home, and constantly traveling in strange cities far from his native London. So it was that Henry Harper found himself in an obscure Shanghai hotel, a guest for one night. In the morning, he had an important appointment with one of the wealthiest dealers in the city. Henry Harper was tired. The noisy, jostling Shanghai streets, a veritable melting pot of races, creeds, and colors, had given him a headache. His eyeballs were scorched from the afternoon sun. So it was that when night came, Henry Harper was more than ready for bed. He'd unpacked all his luggage, attired himself in pajamas, and read himself to sleep, as has been his custom for many years. But he had fallen asleep with the lights on. It was perhaps an hour or two later that Henry Harper stirred restlessly in his bed. His eyes were still closed, but a curious scratching noise came to his ears. Now, Shanghai's street noises had abated somewhat. Now the scratching sound filled the tiny hotel room. Henry Harper sat erect peevishly and opened his eyes to see what the disturbance was. Well, he was hardly prepared for the sight that greeted him. Seated at the dresser in the room, just at the foot of his bed, her back to him, was a lovely Eurasian woman, busily combing her hair as nice as you please. The woman's hair was fantastically long, its black length trailing down her shoulders to the floor. Henry Harper could only gape as the comb in the lady's hand ran briskly through the beautiful hair with easy, feminine strokes. It was the noise of the comb drawing through the hair that had awakened Henry Harper. Before he could open his mouth to speak to the lady, she encountered some difficulty. The comb became snarled in a clump of her hair. Without a moment's hesitation, the lady lifted her head off her shoulders and disentangled the comb from her hair. Henry Harper had seen enough. With terror chilling his brain, he sprang out of bed and flung into the room next to his like a wild man. Four bland Chinese were seated round a deal table having a quiet game of cards. Henry screamed to them about the woman in his room who had removed her head before his very eyes. The four Chinese smiled up at Henry Harper. "Oh, that," they said in chorus. "That's nothing. We can all do that." Whereupon they all, in turn, lifted their heads off their shoulders. So you see, Henry Harper had quite an experience. Of course, no one at the sanitarium believes this, but there you are. I suppose people always expect traveling salesmen to have a lot of funny stories to tell. Oh, by the way, help yourself to a cigar while I step through the wall here and go down to the cellar for another bottle of port. I do hate to take the long way.
Well, there you had a little thing by Boris Karloff, called Don't Lose Your Head. We will not be on with you for October, but when we come back in November, we've got some what I think are very excellent programs and a little bit of excitement, too. We're going to feature the granddaddy of all of radio shows, War of the Worlds. And then by request, we're going to be doing some of the soap opera excerpts, Mert and Marge, Stella Dallas, Ellen Trent, Ma Perkins, and then Mr. District Attorney, Nightbeat, The Fred Allen Show with George Jessel, and Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. And their special guest will be that crazy lady, Carmen Miranda. This is Bud Carey. It's Old Radio Theater. We're delighted that you could join us, and we'll see you in November.